You're listening to The Doug Haldeman Show, Mortgage and Real Estate Talk. Here's your host, mortgage expert and consumer advocate, Doug Haldeman.
Welcome back to the show. I am rejoined by my co-host, Tammy Haldeman. Welcome back, Tammy.
Good to be here today.
All right. We have special guest in studio, John Niemann from Niemann & Company, our tax expert. You are a CPA and veteran tax professional. Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me, Doug. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, you've been on here many, many times. It's love having you on, especially when we have situations come up where people need professional advice. There's so many things when it comes to IRS guidance that it's complicated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know many people that enjoy going to irs.gov and researching those things.
John does.
That's not even fun for me.
Oh, no!
You're good at it, at least.
Yeah, but a lot of people find out about the tax consequences after the transaction's taken place rather than before. And they're usually surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not pre-planning is going to cause issues.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So let's talk about something that came up for you, Doug. And you leaned in on John to kind of advise you on some of this stuff. But you had a client that wanted to come to you. Their parent was gifting them a house. And it was in a primary house for the parent.
Sort of, yes. Sort they were not actually gifting them the house.
Okay.
But the parents found a great deal on a house.
Okay.
In their own neighborhood. It was only 0.4 miles away from their own house.
So they nice. Wanted
close one of the grandkids
to grandma.
Close. One of the grandkids close. And they found a really good deal on it. So, and they own the house next door to it already. And old family wanted to get rid of it. And they, apparently needed some work. So they bought it with cash. Mm-hmm. $250,000 is what they bought it for.
Okay.
And so it was not a primary residence for the parents.
And had some repairs to do.
Yeah, had some repairs to do. The kids moved into it and did the repairs. And when I say kids, they're in they're in their 30s, so it's not like they're not 18 years old or anything. So they move into it, and they've been living there making the payments, and now they needed to buy it from the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So how you structure a transaction like that is pretty important. So how you structure it from the mortgage side is my field, and how you structure it from the tax side is John's field. And John, that's when I called you, right?
Right.
And your situation like this is when you frequently probably see people do a transaction and then later they're trying to figure out the right way they should have structured it.
Right. They feel like all we got to worry about is their gift.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, there's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
With the appropriate advice, they'll realize that there really won't be any gift tax consequences.
Mm-hmm.
What they fail to consider is that there may be some income tax consequences for them personally.
Right, on both sides.
As a result of the mm-hmm. transaction being mm-hmm. part sale, part gift.
Mm-hmm.
Because the IRS pays particular attention to and devotes additional scrutiny to related party transactions.
Okay.
Hmm. Yeah, so related party transaction, go ahead and define that briefly. What constitutes a related party transaction?
Well, if you sell to... Related parties are defined in at least six areas of the Internal Revenue Code. But for purposes of our discussion, we'll just confine it to family members, lineal descendants, and ancestors.
Okay. That's specific enough. I mean, it's not, the neighbor is not a related party.
Right.
It's somebody that's truly related to you as a related party.
Right.
And those are going to fall under more scrutiny by the IRS.
Right. And what the IRS is looking to is, was the transaction arm's length? So when you're transferring property, arm's length means was the transfer at fair market value?
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't, then the part that was, whatever the difference between the fair market value of the date of the transfer and the amount that it was actually transferred for is going to be a gift.
Okay.
Got it. And that definitely applies here. So let's take this specific example, and we're going to go through two examples because this first example we're going to talk about as an investment property. So the parents never lived in this house. We'll come back and we'll apply these same principles if they did live in this house. But in this case, it's an investment property for the parents because they bought it for the kids, but it was never their principal residence. Okay, and they bought it for $250,000. And it's worth $300,000. So there's $50,000. $300,000 is the true fair market value. But they only want to sell it to the kids for the $250,000 that they bought it for. They're right. They don't want to make any money off the kids. They just want to sell it for what they bought it for. Okay, so kids now live there, and they want to purchase the home from their parents, and they're trying to figure out how do they structure this deal. Okay, do they write a contract for $300,000 that is fair market value? Do they write a contract for $250,000? How do they structure this becomes pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
So you and we can tell this from the mortgage side and from the tax side.
Well, I always when I advise clients, I advise them to look at the non-tax consequences first.
Okay.
And then look at your options there, and then see what the tax consequences are relative to each of the options.
Okay, so from a lending standpoint with that, the non-tax consequences, it'd be best for us if they go ahead and write the sales contract at $300,000 and they take out a loan for $250,000 to pay the parents off, and there's a $50,000 gift of equity is how we would have it written into the sales contract.
Right.
And now that $50,000 gift of equity is equity for the kids that would help them avoid private mortgage insurance.
Correct.
And the kids are not having to come out of pocket with any money, which is one of the main goals for the kids.
And they might get a better interest rate as well.
Absolutely. Better interest rate, mm-hmm. better terms altogether. So yeah, that's the optimal way to do it. Okay. Now, they didn't send the sales contract over that way. They only write the sales contract for $250,000. And when I saw that, I said, you know what, here's the issue is now – instead of the kids having 20% equity like was what their hope was, but they don't have 20% to put down, now their loan amount is going to be a percent of the purchase price. Wherever that purchase price is set, okay, I don't care if it's worth $300,000. If the purchase price on paper is $250,000, we are going to loan a percentage of that. So if they wanted to put 20% down, now all of a sudden they're going to have a $200,000 loan on a $250,000 purchase. They'd have $50,000 down. Or I could do less money than that, 5% down, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd still have $12,500 down, but that's $12,500 out of their pocket they don't want to put out.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to find where's the creative solution that you can do.
That's legal.
That's legal. Absolutely. It has to meet lending guidelines, mm-hmm. and it has to meet the tax, IRS guidelines.
Right.
So a couple different options of what we came up with on this. One of the first options was because of it's another important note here is that the parents own the property free and clear. They paid cash for the property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's definitely an important distinction. So here is one option that I brought up to them. Okay, they could quit claim the kids onto the property. So now the kids are on the property with them. And now from a lending standpoint, could we look at refinancing it to pay off the parents? Okay, here's the issue that comes up from it is, because the house is free and clear, there's no loan to pay off. So whatever they borrow to pay off the parents, it's now a cash-out loan. And as a cash-out loan, we have to wait 6 months before we can use the appraised value.
Okay,
we'd have to use the purchase price of $250,000, and you know, they'd only be able to borrow a percentage of that, which wouldn't be enough to pay the parents off. So they could quit claiming the kids on them. We wait 6 months and then do it. You know, and use the appraised value. If it appraised for $300,000, mm-hmm. now there's a little bit of equity, and we could go ahead and pay the parents off if they can cash out up to $250,000.
And this is on an investment property.
It's on investment. Well, mm-hmm. but it's primary residence for the kids.
Right.
Investment property for the parents.
For the parents. Right. Okay.
So here's a better scenario than that even that we came up with. So the parents sell it to the kids. If they want to sell it at the $250,000, the parents own or finance it to the kids. So instead of just mm-hmm. quit claiming them on, so they do it as a refi, they actually sell it to them with a regular sales contract showing $250,000, and they finance the full amount. So they finance the full $250,000. So it's 100% financing, but the parents act as the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now there's $250,000 owed. From lending guidelines, okay, we can now turn around and refinance it using the appraised value immediately because it's not a cash out loan.
Got it.
Okay, they're paying off a legitimate lien because there's literally $250,000 owed to the parents. So that's we'll have a regular payoff for $250,000. We'll use the appraised value so there'll be enough equity there where the kids will get much better terms. Okay. Now, so that's the mortgage side. It's a win for the kids for sure. Okay, that's a great solution for the kids. Now let's talk from the parent side because the parents have to be concerned because they've had a win and they got the $250,000 that they had into the property.
Mm-hmm.
The kids now have their house They're excited about that. The grandkids are now close to them. Tax-wise, John, how do they now deal with that?
Well, tax-wise, you got a couple of things going on here. First of all, because it was sold at less than the fair market value or transferred at less than fair market value, you've got a gift to the kids equal to the difference between the fair market value and the transfer, the price at which it was transferred. In our example, that would be 300 fair market value minus 250.
50,000 gain, yeah.
Right. So $50,000
difference.
$50,000
gift. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not going to be a problem for most people because, well, first of all, there's an annual exclusion of $14,000
per person. So mom and dad, that's $28,000 now.
$28,000. And to each child. So the son-in-law and the daughter.
Okay.
So you can pretty much wipe out the gift tax.
So you can give, right, so even the son-in-law, because the daughter can get the $28,000, the son-in-law can also get $28,000.
Right. There may be some nuances that you've got to do in terms of how the property is titled.
Okay.
But even if it were just a son or a daughter involved, and you went beyond that $14,000 per year annual exclusion, which is $28,000 if you elect gift splitting for a single person, if you're gifting to one individual. Anything over and above that, you can use you can apply against your unified credit, which is currently $5.49 million. That's the amount of an estate.
Not a problem. Not a problem for most people.
That's the amount that the estate has to be valued at before you even have to worry about estate taxes. So really no gift tax consequences other than the fact that they have to file a gift tax return.
Okay. So far, so good.
So far, so good. The bad news is that because you've got a related party transaction, it's a part sale, part gift. So you've got part of your basis gets allocated to the gift and part of your tax basis gets allocated to the sale. Mm-hmm. So the gift was $50,000 divided by the $300,000. I'm sorry, $50,000 divided by $300,000. So you allocate a portion of your basis to the gift. The remaining basis becomes the basis that you use for gain or loss on the actual sale of the residence, or I'm sorry, of the property.
Okay, so I can immediately say from that's complicated enough that the average person really better not be trying to figure that on their own.
Well, it gets even better because as we've discussed, there were some improvements made to the property as well. So you can add improvements to your basis as well, and thereby reducing what you ultimately will have to pay tax on. So right.
Okay, so they did do some work to the property. So the work they did to the property can add to the basis and reduce the taxes a little bit. But even though the gift, you know, there's enough gift available with the gift exclusion, they're fine there. They still would be paying capital gain on whatever the gain is left.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so taking the fair market value of $300,000 and subtracting off whatever the true cost basis in the property is, which is the $250,000 that they bought it for plus any work they put into it.
Well, no, you take their basis and you allocate part of the basis to the gift. You look at $250,000.
So it's a percentage
gift.
Of it.
Right.
Got it. So that complicated. It definitely gets much more complicated in that in the calculations then.
Right.
Okay. So moral of the story there is you really need trusted advisors on each side of this. Tammy, can you
definitely
see that?
Definitely so, for sure.
All right. So if you're in a situation where you need advice on this, okay, reach out. You can reach out directly to me on the mortgage side and directly to John Neiman on the CPA or tax side. So if you want to reach me, best number to reach me is 314-472-DOUG. That's 472-DOUG, D-O-U-G, which is 3684. And, John, what's the best way for somebody to reach you?
You can reach me at 314-669-4886.
So that's 314-669-4886, or they can visit your website at neimanandcompany.com. Real quick, because I know we're out of time, but if it's a primary residence, let's switch around those same numbers to a primary residence. Do they have all those same considerations or not?
You still have the gift tax issue, which is pretty much a non-event, other than the fact that you have to file a gift tax return.
And but when I say primary residence, I mean if it was a primary residence for the parents.
For the parents.
And they want to pass the house they lived in along to their kids.
Right. No gift tax consequences other than the fact that you have to file a return.
Okay.
On the sales side of it, it's not an issue because the gain on the sale of the property is excluded under 121, sale of a primary residence.
Okay, so you can on the sale of primary residence, you can exclude up $250,000 for an individual or $500,000 for a couple.
Correct.
Okay, and they're going to be well below that number. So right. No tax consequences passed along their primary residence.
Right.
All right, one advice on this, definitely reach out to us. And if you want to look at some of this and re-listen to this because it's very detailed, visit our website at smartwithyourmoney.com. And you also can dial up our podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Look for Smart With Your Money with Doug Haldeman. John, if you have time to stick around, I have more questions for you when it comes to how to resolve tough IRS issues when somebody's behind on their taxes. You'll listen to Doug Haldeman Show on FM News Talk 97.1.